Your Afternoon with Helen Shield on ABC Radio Hobart and across Tasmania.
A local historian who describes himself as, quote, obsessed with the Tasmanian high country and west coast, has been working on a book of history on the Thylacine, quite apart from all of this week's excitement. Nick Haygarth, the Thylacines were hunters themselves. What happened when the European hunters tried to share their territory?
It was thought that Thylacine was killing sheep. And, of course, there's been a lot of debate about that recently when it was revealed that, or suggested that the Thylacine couldn't open its jaws wide enough to kill a sheep.
Wow.
Perhaps it could take lambs. But, of course, there was a widespread problem from the beginning of European settlement with wild dogs killing sheep, and there was probably a lot of confusion about whether it was wild dogs or whether it was Thylacines.
There's a lot of talk about the bounty on the Thylacine. How responsible do you believe that bounty was in the end?
There were a number of bounty schemes, and I gather the one you're referring to is the government bounty scheme, which operated 1888 to 1909. So that paid £1 for an adult and half a pound for a pup. I don't think it had a big part to play in the demise of the Thylacine. There were about 2,200 bounties paid, so 2,200 Thylacines died. But to me, a lot of those would have been incidental killings. Wherever you had grazing, you had stockmen, and stockmen were paid a small wage, often it was £20 to £30, and they made most of their money from the fur industry. So it was in the interest of the grazier for a stockman to be killing wallabies, paddy melons, kangaroos that ate the grass, and also getting rid of anything that might threaten the stock. And with sheep, that was thylacines, it was devils, and it was sometimes eagles or hawks or birds of prey. So to me, there's a much bigger thing happening, killing of thylacine by hunter stockmen. That's not where the money was for them. The money was in these other animals, particularly in the brush possum and in paddy melons and in wallabies. That's where the big money was for a stockman. So they might make 30, 40 pounds a year wages. They'd get rations as well from their employer. But some of these guys could make hundreds of pounds a year out of furs.
Wow.
So, you know, a £1 bounty for a thylacine, which is relatively scarce compared to these other animals anyway. For example, in the period 1923 to 28, when we have very good statistics for the hunting industry, there were 4.5 million marsupials killed.
4.5 million?
4.1 year alone, 1934, 1.5 million ringtail possums. That's only the registered skins.
The ringtails, not even the brushes.
Yeah, we're talking about 2,200 thylacine bounties paid by the government over a period of 21 years. And we've got these huge numbers of these other animals.
Mm.
Puts it in proportion as to the amount of money there was to be made in possums and wallabies rather than in thylacines.
Nick Haygarth, why was there such big money in those other marsupials?
I'm now talking about a period when thylacines are very scarce. After World War One, a typical thing that happens during a major conflict like a world war is that trade disappears. And so after World War One finished, there was a great resumption of all those things that people enjoyed. And one of them was furs. The other thing that happened was that Russia was in a state of civil war. The Russian Revolution happened. There were 4 years, I think, of civil war. So Soviet Union, as it became, was removed from the fur market for many years. And Tasmanian furs, particularly brush possum fur, found a real niche at this time. In 1932, for example, the fashionable British bride would not think of departing on her honeymoon without a Tasmanian brush possum collar coat.
Mm.
It was quite the fashionable thing to have.